Hi everyone, this week on the Laura Hornart podcast, we're talking about how to get your creative juices flowing. How do you maintain momentum and consistently show up to create? We talk about our struggles with this and how important it is to just begin.
Hello Laura, how are you going?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm enjoying the fact that you're all flustered.
Oh, that's right, because maybe we were having a what would you call it?
Conversation.
About what we're going to chat about during this podcast.
You want to do the podcast before the podcast and then do the podcast. Let's just do the podcast.
Okay, what are we talking about?
So today we're talking about how do we go about consistently showing up to create.
Yeah, this is a juicy topic, and I often get asked questions around this, and it came up in the Facebook community for my online classes this week about what are some of the things that you can do to help you consistently create, whatever that might be for you, whether that's painting or drawing or pottery or photography or whatever it is that you have as a creative outlet. How do you do it consistently? How do you keep the momentum going? And I've really been having a think about what have I done over the past few years to help me to continue to grow my creativity. So I think the first thing is to just put it out there as an intention and to really make a commitment to yourself and to others, if you can, that you want to do this thing, whatever this thing might be. And then you've got to think about the practical side of how do you make it happen more easily for yourself. And one of the big ones, I think, is making it easy to do. So that could be a matter of just getting organized, having all your materials or the gear that you need easy to access, making the space to create. So if you are painting, for example, having a dedicated space was a big game changer for me. Initially, when I started painting, I used to get out my supplies and work at the dining room table, and then when it was dinner time, I'd need to pack everything away. And every time I wanted to create, I really needed to set up. But if you can find even the smaller space where you can actually leave things out, so it's easy for you to just grab some paints or pens, pencils, or whatever it might be, it's going to make a huge difference. And I started off with a very tiny little table in the corner of our lounge room. And then I took over a larger dining table so that in our dining room.
And an easel.
And an easel. So for a while, our house pretty much looked like an art studio when you walked in. There was
drop sheets,
large canvases, easels, all in our main living area. And that was a bit challenging, but I needed it in order to continue creating on a regular basis. It enabled me to access my art very easily. And at the time, my children were quite young. I had a preschooler, and it was a way of creating and having him be in the background playing with his toys. He's, you know, sometimes he'd be under the table just playing with his Lego while I was doing an art journal page or something like that. And then over time, you know, it became clear that this was something that I was really serious about. And then we started making plans to have a studio that was not our whole living area, and we converted our garage into a studio. But that took time, you know, it was a series of steps. But very early on in my art making, I recognized the importance of making space that was dedicated to it.
What difference did it make getting out of the dining room and into your own studio, because you were still working when you moved into that studio space?
So I think that it allowed me to change the type of art that I did when I moved into the studio space. So
I guess what I'm trying to say is when you moved out of dining room table and into a specifically built studio for you, did that change the way you thought and felt about the work you were doing? Did it make it more real?
Oh, there was definitely a shift, and that's probably where things started to transition from it being a sort of side hustle or a hobby into something that I could see the potential for it to be something bigger. And that happened when I guess I gave it that importance that it deserved, that kind of space. And, you know, it did change things. I was able to start working on bigger canvases. I was really able to get in the zone. So it helped me to do the kind of work where you really need to get into that space where nothing else is really happening. Up until then, I was doing a lot of work on paper and art journaling and things like that, which is really fantastic when you've got young children, easy to kind of pick up and get into. But when I moved into the studio, it really allowed me to go in deeper with my work and do more larger canvases, series, like bodies of work and things like that. So it was a very positive thing for me and my creative process. But every stage that I went through was part of getting there.
Having a space is most definitely a very important part of a creative process. You have a studio, you have your space, everything's good, but there must be some tools that you use that keeps you creative.
It's a hard one to answer, you know, because I've often wondered that. You know, I tried many different things. I tried blogging on sort of wellness topics and things like that, and you know, really exploring, you know, I went through phases of cooking and all sorts of things, but for some reason when I picked up a paintbrush, it really stuck. You know, I knew that this was something that I wanted to get better at, and I wasn't very good when I started. There was a huge gap between where I wanted to be and where I was. And I was very determined. So there was a real love of the learning opportunity in it that kept me wanting to get better. Another thing that really helped was that I started sharing on social media, and I did that quite early on when I really didn't have much of a clue what I was doing. But I started posting on Instagram almost daily, and that really encouraged me to keep creating it. It created a little bit of accountability, and it was just, it motivated me. I would think about things that I could create and share, and then I could get a bit of feedback, and that really helped as well to get a bit of momentum with my creative process.
Even though you were only just starting out, you decided to jump in 100%, so you didn't really care if everything was perfect or the conditions were right or anything like that. You just went full steam ahead.
Absolutely. And it's kind of funny thinking about it now, because I don't know why that happened, but I just went all in really early. And I had young children. I was working 4 days a week in an office. The conditions were not perfect. But, you know, I didn't have all the stuff. We didn't have huge amounts of money to spend on supplies and things like that. If you're waiting for it to be perfect, you might be waiting forever. You know, life is not perfect. You may not have an ideal space. You may not feel like you have enough time. But if you can shift the way you think, you can open up doors to create where you probably don't realize those doors are there. So it is a big mindset game, really.
The one thing I found when I first started out in photography, a major topic in the photography world is losing your creative mojo. And what some photographers would do is that they would give themselves these little projects, and they do like 30 photos in 30 days, or even some really ambitious photographers would do a photograph a day for a year. And the results were fantastic. And then when you see them talking about it, they talk about the struggles of committing to something so big.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I am a huge fan of projects, 30-day projects, challenges. I think they're fantastic. They really help you to keep motivated. And by focusing in on something, you really learn whatever it is that you're doing at a more deeper level. And you don't have to spend time thinking about what are you going to do. It's I guess, a way of being more efficient with your time. So if you set a 30-day project, I'm going to do a botanical watercolor, for example, every day for 30 days. Your entry point into that process is really easy. You know what you're doing, you can have your supplies ready, and you can get stuck in straight away. It is fantastic. I do them quite a bit, and I also, even if I don't do time-bound projects, one of the things that has helped me in the last few years is I tend to work on a series at a time. So, for example, a little while ago I did a neutral series. I started really getting interested in just using very simple colour palettes that were very earthy kind of colours and working on paper with very minimalistic designs. And that, you know, that really helped me to narrow my focus. So I think another great way to encourage consistent creativity is to narrow your focus, is to choose something and just work on that for a period of time, and you'll be amazed at how much you learn and grow through doing that.
But speaking of continuous learning, like I've got so many influencers in my life, and these guys have no idea who I am. All I am is a subscription or someone that's bought something from them. But they've taught me so much, and they help me be creative. Doing online courses, I find that also helps the creative process. Like, it really gets the juices going.
Yeah, I think if you can find a community to connect with, whether that be online or in person, it's a wonderful way to encourage you to continue creating and provide you with really valuable connections too. And I have been involved in many online classes. A lot of my learning has been through online experiences. And I also have many friends and family members that are in the creative community. And just having someone that you can have a chat about, talk about what your latest endeavor is, what supplies you're using, that in itself is going to encourage you to keep going. So surrounding yourself with like-minded people is very helpful and also very enjoyable. I'm just thinking now of all the cups of tea that I've had with my sister, who paints as well, and my sister-in-law, who's a printmaker, and that really just keeps the momentum going too.
You've even done markets with Kim.
I have. She does art markets too. And, I've met many people through doing local art markets, people in the local community that have a shared passion for making things. And if you have the opportunity to do something like that, get yourself out there, you will be rewarded hugely by those connections, encouragement, feedback, ideas, business ideas even. It's wonderful.
Even going to art markets can boost your creativity.
Yeah, that's another great idea. One of the things that I really love doing is going to local exhibitions and things and bringing my kids with me. So I brought my daughter recently to an Aboriginal art exhibition that was on at the Adelaide Gallery, the art gallery, and I was really inspired by that when I came back. So, yeah, go out and explore. I mean, at the moment in Adelaide, it's the SALA, South Australian Living Artists Festival. So there's exhibitions on all over the place. So it's making me realise that I need to go out and check out a few exhibitions this weekend before they finish.
So you're being creative, you're doing online courses, you're learning as much as you can, you're in a community or you've joined a club. Like, I'm just... all of this resonates with me because it's exactly the way photography works. Mm. But, and there is a big but, the thing with photography is there's an assumption that because you have a camera or a good camera that you're a good photographer. So as a photographer, you need to know what work you can do. Just knowing your limitations, is very, very important as well in the creative process.
Yeah, I think a healthy dose of realism is a good thing, and recognizing what you can achieve with your creativity given everything else that you have going on in your life. So that could be around what your skill level is. I talked about that gap, which can be a hard one to grapple with as artists. There's a great quote somewhere that I can't think of it, but it's around the fact that generally if you're drawn towards things like photography and painting, you have incredible taste. So what you love is really high quality art, photography, and that's what you want to make. But when you're starting out, you can't live up to your taste. So recognizing where you are at in your own experience of making what it is that you make, that's very important. And recognizing what time you have available to you, if you have a full-time job, you have children, those sorts of things. So yes, being realistic about where you are in your creative journey is going to make this process so much easier for you, because then you can adapt. You can adapt your creative endeavor to whatever is happening in your life. So it could be that for you, getting out and shooting with your camera once a week is really fantastic, and it's enough to keep things going, but also allows you to spend time with your family, do your job, etc. You don't want to be comparing yourself to someone who has a studio, who can, you know, take photos most days, or similarly with, you know, someone like myself who now works full-time as an artist. You need to be kind to yourself about what your circumstances are. So I think that is really important.
Yeah, what you find is the longer you're in the game and the more professionals you get to know, you realize that photographs they take on a daily basis tend to be work. They're doing what they love, but they're still working. And when you start talking to them about their passion, they say, oh, you mean unpaid personal projects. So that's their creative process. They shoot weddings, it's a job. They have to do corporate headshots, it's a job. They have to go and do architecture or real estate, it's a job. But finding a project, you know, if they're a coffee lover, go and photograph all the coffee shops in your city. You know, make a project. That's where these Instagram projects came from. People of New York, the Doggist, all these people, they just found something they wanted to drop into their creative process, and it just takes off.
Yeah. And I think that's really important, because you've also got people on the other end of the spectrum, as you say, that are doing their craft on a daily basis, and it is work. And with that, having a personal project, or sometimes they're called passion projects, that's actually going to help keep your creative juices flowing. Because if you are doing things that are becoming repetitive, starting to feel like you're just, you know, churning things out, then that is also a challenge to your creativity. You may be doing it every day, but you may not be getting those creative benefits that you will get from a new project that's really linked in with something that you love.
Well, talking about that, I remember the last commission you ever painted, because I would watch you struggle with commissions because your art evolves so quickly. So you'd agree to do a commission 6 months ago, and you're not even on that color palette anymore. And I don't know if I should say this or not, but I remember you going absolutely crazy. You're frustrated, you're losing your mind. And I managed to talk to you, to calm you down a little. And I'm saying, what's going on? You calmed down and we spoke and we talking about it. And then we realized that you're trying to do this commission for this person, and one of the briefs was two colours that you didn't even have in the house.
Yeah, that's true. It is a true story from quite a long time ago now.
Yes.
But yes, I don't actually really do commissions anymore because I find them incredibly challenging to do. And I do work in a very intuitive way, and I am very influenced by things like the change in a season completely affects the kind of colours that I want to use. That's the way that I work. And for a long time, I was kind of battling with that and, you know, wanting my art to kind of fit in a box. And now I've kind of moved past that and I enjoy it for what it is. You know, I like it when my art evolves because I'm feeling the colours of the autumn leaves, or, you know, the starkness of the bare trees, which is what's been happening recently with us coming, you know, through winter. So what would happen is I would get contacted when I was in a bright, summery, you know, vibrant colours phase and asked to do a commission. And then by the time I could actually schedule it in, I would have moved into my earthy, you know, settling down, it's the middle of winter mode. And I just really struggle to get into that headspace of where, you know, of the kind of painting that the client was looking for. So, yeah, it's a real challenge.
So just for the listeners out there, you did go to the shop the next day, bought the two colours and delivered on the commission.
Yeah, I think it might have been, you know, the client wanted something that was very bright, like almost like a fluorescent yellow and whatnot. And I didn't even have the colours that were requested. And I was trying to paint this painting, and eventually you told me that I really needed to listen to my client. So I did. And I ended up painting the painting just so that everyone knows. And everything did work out in the end, but we did have a real tussle along the way.
A tussle. Let's just call it a tussle. Yeah. Okay. Agreed on tussle.
Yeah.
Just bringing it back to photography, because I don't know it often about art, but when you hit creative rut, you know, when you're kind of lost for something to do, So sometimes it's difficult to like ask your neighbor, you know, hey, do you want to go and take some photographs? Like, it's easy for me because I work with athletes and it's very simple for me to say, look, I want to work on something, let's go and do this. What I find myself doing is going, oh, if I only had that camera, and maybe if I had that lens, I could maybe get a better shot. And then all of a sudden, I'm not thinking about creating anymore. I'm thinking about gear. And I get it, what we call in photography is called gear envy. Now, I don't know if there's a similar gear envy in the art world. I don't know if that exists, does it?
Yeah, I think people go a bit supplies crazy in the art world. So we talk more about supplies than gear, but very similar thing, and I see it a lot. And yeah, and it's happened to me as well, where you feel like you need something in order to be able to create, and your desire to have all the things can get in the way of the creative process. I really do believe that you can do a lot with quite a small kit. You don't need all the things. And I encourage people to be selective about what they choose to use. And there are a lot of, in I guess, art supply land, there are a lot of big sets of things that you can buy. So you can buy all the colours, a massive set of pastels, for example, with 100 pastels in there. And I would say most people who buy those sets end up with only a handful of those pastels that they will find that they go back and choose again and again, because we are drawn to certain colours and things. And I think when you go into the art shop, what I find really enjoyable is to look at the ones that they sell singularly and to just choose maybe five and really look at the colours and go, which ones would I love to work with? And I really enjoy that. So I never buy sets of things. I always buy individuals, and I always buy quite small quantities, and then I might add over time. So for example, with the Daniel Smith watercolors that I love, I now have probably about 20 of them, but I started when I first bought them, I think I bought three, and I worked with three for quite a while. So yeah, I think getting caught up in supplies or gear can get in the way.
Yeah, because like your course that we're in the middle of filming, well, we're just about to wrap up next week, is so minimal. But you still manage to use multiple tools and different variations of the same colour. So there's still there's still always that little something extra, isn't there?
Yeah, well, that was quite challenging, actually, you know, to use. So the whole concept of the class was really around only using a couple of colours. But I did allow myself to use quite a few different tools and techniques. So I was kind of compensating for using not a lot of colour, but looking at how I could add in sort of extra details and add depth to the pieces by using tools. But I did find I had to check in with myself, because I found myself almost wanting to add in more, and, you know, so it is a challenging process to limit your supplies. But as you were talking, actually, it made me think about how we are quite different in this respect, because I am all about not having that much, but whatever I do have, it's got to be good, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes. But in saying that, like, you're not going to run out and spend $10,000 on a camera.
No. But I do I do believe in certain things, that good quality supplies make a difference. But it's not in everything. So you've got to be careful with this. So this is not I'm not advocating going out and buying the best of everything. But with watercolour, for example, because it's a great way to demonstrate this, because I see it in my classes. When you use watercolour, there is a big difference between what you can achieve in a watercolour painting with cheap watercolours versus more expensive watercolours. Also, the paper makes a big difference. With acrylic paint, I feel like you can actually get away more with some of the cheaper craft paints that are out there. So it's the same rules don't apply across different mediums. So get to know your supplies and notice, pay attention to the differences. Where you can get away with using cheaper stuff, do it. But where you see that is hindering you and you're not able to get the results that you're looking for, then that's a case of looking at how you can use your money that you've got better. So spend your money on the things where it's going to make the biggest difference.
Like when people go into the gallery, do they say, Laura, did you use Daniel Smith's watercolours? Or
I only ever get asked those kind of questions in my class, groom groups. I have never been asked from the people that I sell my work to, so my bigger paintings, my paper pieces, I've never been asked what I've used to make them. People who are making art often get very hung up on the supply side of things. What brand, what colour, what piece of, you know, what brush, what. But people see, they're looking at the big picture and they're seeing what you are making and how that all combines together. And they're not going to care about what brush you used or what, you know. So yeah, use what gives you the results that make you feel good.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, you gotta really love what you're doing.
I think that's what this really comes back to, doesn't it? Like, we had the conversation at the very beginning about how come I went all in, how did I manage to create most days? And it was because I just loved it. You know, I really enjoyed it. And if you can find what you love, you will keep coming back. And if you're struggling a little bit, it may not be that you don't, it's not that you don't necessarily love it. It may be that you just haven't quite found the process that you enjoy. You know, it might be that there's still a bit more exploring to do before you find your kind of way. For me, mixed media art was a big one. So I started doing quite a bit of just painting with acrylic paints. And I had a huge amount of frustration when I first started painting. Huge. Like, I would get really mad at almost every painting that I made.
Can I tell people that you actually stabbed a painting?
I was trying to keep that to myself. But anyway,
no.
Very early on in the in my painting experience, I actually did stab a painting with a knife, which I was trying to keep to myself. But it goes to show with this podcast, I'm not going to be able to keep any of my secrets.
No.
This is
a... I'm just glad it wasn't me.
So, yeah, everyone...
Although it might be later.
Everyone always says that I'm a very calm person. But, yeah, I have my moments. And I certainly did when I first started painting. There was a lot of frustration with not being able to paint the way that I wanted to. But when I discovered mixed media art, when I started adding in other elements, so using pens and pastels and, you know, not always using acrylic, that's when I really, really started to enjoy making art. And that spurred me on, and that's when I opened up a lot of doors to learning and classes and YouTube videos and articles and books and all sorts of fascinations. So that was a key turning point for me. So if you're struggling right now, there might be something just around the corner that is really going to connect with you, and you're just going to be set on this path where, you know, you're falling in love with a process, and you then just want to keep exploring that, and that will propel you forwards.
So if I was to ask you for two pieces of advice, the first piece of advice is to someone that is just starting out, what would that be?
I think my first piece of advice for someone just starting out would be to open yourself up to as many experiences as you can, to give yourself that opportunity to find what you love in the process. So exploring online art classes that perhaps have quite a bit of diversity in them, for example. There is a great course called Lifebook, which I'm lucky enough to be a teacher on this year, but I did that class as a student as well, and it offers a lot of different types of art that you can do in an online format. So I think things like that, having quite diverse resources that you can pull on, is great when you're starting out. And I would also add creating a dedicated space.
And the second bit of advice would be to someone that's more advanced, is well along the road on their art journey, if they're in just having a tiny little dip in their creativity for whatever reason, it can be any reason whatsoever, somebody that's already along the road in their creative journey.
Well, there are a few things that spring to mind. One thing is to be compassionate with yourself, because when you're in it for a long time, there are ebbs and flows. So I see that in myself too, that I have periods of great creativity, bursts of ideas, and then I have periods where I'm a bit, you know, just not as motivated. So there's a little bit of acceptance that I think can be helpful. But as far as actually getting out of that stage, so when you are sort of feeling a little bit uninspired, I think that approaching your work from a different angle is really key. So we were talking about passion projects. If you can find something new and exciting to experiment with, and even have that going on the side, I think that can really help to keep you excited over the long haul. And sometimes it could be even a completely different medium, you know. So if you're a watercolor artist, for example, just switching out into something else, maybe trying acrylic paint, can really, you know, get you excited again. So I see that a lot. You know, I have a lot of conversations with people about getting in a creative rut. It's a very hot topic, you know, in online communities. And a lot of people say that they find doing something a little bit different is really helpful. And one of the things that I do when I'm not really feeling it is I do collage work. I cut up old paintings, and I do get back to really childlike kind of gluing and sticking. And I find that is a really great way for me to reconnect with creating. it gives me a bit of a break from some of the other work that I do. So a little side project, that's what I would suggest for someone who is sort of on their way with their creativity but needs a little bit of a boost. Have a little think about something that you could do, maybe something that you haven't tried or something that you see online and you kind of ooh and ah, and maybe just give that a try.
I find that when you're in a bit of a creative block that you do get an idea and you're like, yeah, I'll explore that idea, and then you just can't do it because there's something stopping you, and all you got to do is begin. Just get off the couch and begin. Just do it.
Yeah, you just got to throw yourself into things sometimes. I mean, I had that struggle with going to the gym. You know, I had so many excuses, and it is a case of just get started. And so often it's the getting started that's the really hard part with anything. I still have trouble getting into my studio. You know, I love painting, but I have a little bit of a block sometimes with just getting into the studio. So yeah, there's an element of just needing to jump into something, just get off the couch, just do it. You've got to do the whole self-talk thing, really. You've got to tell yourself, right, come on now, get yourself into the studio. Once you get the music on, you'll be right. You know, just have some triggers that remind you. So when I go into the studio, I always do a few things. You know, I always have a cup of tea. I always put some music on. I always sit down as I'm drinking the cup of tea and just have a little bit of a think about my intention and what I'd like to do today. And I'm checking in with how I'm feeling, what kind of mood I'm in, what type of work would suit my mood. So if I'm feeling like I just want to, you know, let loose, then the music's up loud, the big brushes are out, the big canvas is on the wall, and it's kind of a, you know, free-for-all. But if I'm feeling like I just want to potter and I just want to, then I might put a podcast on, you know, and I might get out a piece of paper and just sit at my desk and have a few watercolors. So how you enter your creative process is very important. Well, that's it for this week. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast, and perhaps you'll join us next week when we sit down and have another cozy chat.